Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, ready. Hello, everybody. Oh, no, I'm not. Hang on.
Sip of gin. While Alan's dying, I'm going to say hello. Welcome to Homo Sapiens. We greet you, we embrace you.
We cough on you.
How are you, Alan?
Well, apart from my consumption, I shall be bursting into La Boheme in a second. I'm pretty good. Lala and I have had a lovely walk outside for her ablutions. And I'm still ploughing through Borgen. It's thrilling, but it's not a thriller. It's a Danish TV show. It was actually started like 10 years ago. But I've just come to it very late, and I'm just obsessed with it. It's about politics, and it's a bit like The Good Wife. You know that show I was in? It's a bit like a Danish Good Wife, I realise. But it's about this woman who becomes the prime minister, and she stops being prime minister. It goes on for many seasons. But it's my sort of treat. And the thing is, what's really interesting about it, because of the subtitles, you really have to pay attention.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? That's what I think it's quite good. I think I've realised I've got into the habit of that thing of watching telly whilst doing other things. And I think it's that phone in hand or kind of, you know, reading or cooking or doing something else. So I'm actually really enjoying being back to that sort of, that's my new thing. I'm trying to focus more. Not to have my phone in my hand at all times and not have 10 different things open on my computer or, you know, when I'm doing one thing, sitting down and reading a book, I just want to kind of try and be a bit more focused in my life.
I'm terrible at that focus thing, and I always have about 40 tabs open on my desktop and 100 tabs open on my phone. And I don't really read anymore because I just think I'm too fragmented. I really miss that.
I've been reading when I go to bed.
Really?
Which I'm really enjoying. Anyway, shall we talk about today's guest?
Yes, we've got a theme this time, haven't we?
It's a special theme and quite a serious theme, obviously. It's LGBTQ+ homelessness, which is a huge problem. I'm not sure if you know that, viewing listeners.
We're going to talk to Carla Ecola.
Runs a thing called the Outside Project, which helps LGBTQIA+ people get into... Well, they have an actual homeless shelter in Clerkenwell, north centre-ish of London, in an old fire station, I believe.
Yes, and Sadiq Khan,
former guest,
friend of the show, he was involved in setting it up, I think. But also, there's so many specifics around being queer and the homeless scene, which I think are really important.
Well, Grant, my hubby works, teaches an art class at the Harvey Milk High School, which is part of the Hetrick Martin Institute in New York, in downtown New York. And it's a lot of homeless kids are in this program that he teaches, and a lot of, and predominantly of colour. And he's told me several times that some of the kids say, you know, that the homeless kids say that they're actually scared to go into certain homeless shelters, and especially the trans ones, because they said it actually can be very transphobic. Even ones that accept gay kids, they're still a problem. And they sometimes feel, you know, preyed on and scared to, you know, because of other people who are there that are sort of predators. So there's a lot layers and layers of awfulness surrounding this issue, and I think it would be really fascinating to talk to someone who's really at the heart of the storm.
Time for us to go and chat to
Carla Ecola, who runs the Outside Project.
Off we go.
Tell us everything about the Outside Project, please, Carla.
So the Outside Project, I would say conversation started around 2016. So I worked at the homelessness sector myself, and so colleagues of mine who were also LGBTIQ+, we would discuss cases and how hard it was for our clients to come out within those services or to find specialist support services. And then around 2017, that's when we started to meet up officially and to have these conversations with other key people in the sector.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were looking around, we were looking for buildings, we were looking for space to have a winter shelter, and it just wasn't happening. And I think that that's probably the worst thing about trying to set up a homelessness service is not being able to find a space for it. So we started to campaign publicly. We were going out into cabaret shows around the scene, just talking to the community, and they helped us to self-fund for that first winter.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was great. We based the shelter on a tour bus.
Oh, wow.
A 12-bed tour bus. It was used by Status Quo.
Wow. That's
check down the back of the seats before you...
We did.
Status Quo, for those listeners who don't know, we're a 70s and 80s British kind of rock band.
Yeah.
With these sort of real geezers. Whatever you want, whatever you need.
How did you get hold of that bus?
We were contacting tour bus companies, and there was one that just kind of offered it to us at cost.
Oh,
so they saw what we were trying to do with it, and they were like, we know that you don't have any money. We know that this service is really needed and missing. So,
that's,
you know,
great.
That was 10 weeks over winter 2017-18. And then throughout 2018, we started campaigning again for a more permanent space. And we reopened that Christmas 2018. And we've been open ever since. So it was initially a winter shelter. And then we campaigned to be year round.
How did you get the place? Because you're now in a former fire house, isn't that right?
Yeah, so we're in the fire station now, and that was through working with the GLA, so Mayor of London.
That's in Clerkenwell, right?
Yep.
Because we spoke to Sadiq Khan on a previous episode, and we spoke about you guys, and he was saying he was, you know, very proud to be part of it and stuff. But am I right in thinking there's like a physical side to what you do, but there's also quite a lot of other stuff that you do in the community or online and things like that?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, running the space is at the centre of what we do. So having the actual physical night shelter, the community centre is also really important. It's an important part of our outreach, just giving a space for people to actually come in and talk about what they're going through, but not in that kind of prescribed way. We recognise that our community are less likely to walk into council, homeless persons units or support services and say outright what's going on. But then, you know, they'll come to a craft evening or a taekwondo lesson, you know, or they'll be part of an activist group and they'll kind of get to know us. And then they'll be like, oh, yeah, I'm homeless as well, you know, in that kind of way. Or I'm sofa surfing, or this has happened. So I think that they kind of build up a trust with us first.
That's nice.
In a lot of ways. I think that's why the community centre has been really important.
And how many people can you house each night?
So our night shelter is a 10-bed shelter. But obviously, during COVID, we've expanded our services. So we have over 20 people that we're housing at the moment in domestic abuse refuge and in hotels, emergency hotel rooms. And so we've had to grow quite a lot, the amount of support that we can deliver during this time. But before that, it was just quite a small service. It's quite a small community-run project. But I don't think we ever really want to have like these massive warehouses. You know, we've worked in them in the past, and I think that homelessness services are kind of moving away from that as well. That they're not the most therapeutic spaces. So it's more about trying to create small, specialised accommodations.
Right.
Where people can really feel like they're part of a group. It's not, I think one of the biggest fears that people have about entering any kind of homelessness accommodation is not knowing who their neighbour is, or not knowing who's sleeping next to them in like these dormitory style. You know, you see these like massive warehouse spaces, you know, with beds lined up. And I think that's what everyone expects when they come to a shelter. But our project, you know, it's like three or four people in a room. So it's more like a shared house than this kind of dormitory style accommodation. That it just works better for people, for their mental health, for their recovery from homelessness. They just feel safer.
That's so nice.
Because that's one of the awful things about another layer of awfulness for to be queer and homeless is the sort of fear of homophobia and transphobia that exists within these within shelters.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and that happens. I think we have referrals from people who are in homelessness services, you know, from the workers there just saying, you know, they don't feel safe here, or they're actually not safe here. They've experienced transphobia or homophobia.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a real big issue. There's only 77 beds within London that are specific to the LGBTIQ plus community.
Wow.
But also the percentage, the ratio is much higher, isn't it, of LGBTQ homeless people to non. So therefore, That's really scary that that's the only number in the whole of London.
Yeah, definitely. What you get from like stats for queer youth, they said like a quarter of queer youth experience homelessness.
What?
I think if we were able to collect data in a proper way, if there was more services where people were able to go and feel, I think like the older generation are less likely to go into a homelessness service and say that their sexuality or gender identity is part of their homelessness. Mm-hmm. Like that's something that we know from running the Outside Project. So I think the stats for, you know, the general population is probably much higher, but we just don't have that information. We don't, a lot of homelessness services, they don't collect that information. They don't, you know, it's a demographic that they don't really consider when they're talking to people about their homelessness experience. So that's a problem in itself. But I think, I think the number would be much higher.
Can I just ask slight sidebar, but the word homelessness, because I think Sadiq was saying to me, like, he was like, we don't really say homeless, we say rough sleeper. Is that right? Is there a way that people use the terminology?
Carla's slightly scowling.
Yeah.
I think...
As in, sorry, I mean, no, I would never be correcting you. I just wanted to make sure I was getting right.
Oh, no. No, it's fine. It's just that people who are rough sleeping are really the tip of the iceberg of homelessness. Mm-hmm. So that's like what people see on the street. And I think there's so many more people that are living in temporary accommodation. They're squatting, they're sofa surfing, they're walking around throughout the night, but they're sleeping during the day in public toilets, things like that. So there's this whole like huge amount of people kind of underneath the surface that, you know, maybe aren't recognized as homeless and don't recognize themselves either, because the image that people have of someone who's homeless is that person sleeping on the street in the doorway. Mm-hmm. But homelessness, especially in our community, hidden homelessness. So like Alan was saying about people feeling afraid in homelessness services, it's the same on the street. So LGBT people are less likely to be sleeping rough on the street amongst like general homelessness population or just the world in general, because hate crime towards our community in public spaces, you know, that's a thing. It's so high. Yeah. So I think people are just scared in general of being out on the street.
And is there also like that thing of having to come out all the time as well? You know, if you're going to a new shelter or with a new group of people and people don't want to do that.
Yeah, or not coming out, just like having to hide who they are to access those spaces, you know, especially for our trans community as well.
Yes.
Especially that, you know, they don't have access to, you know, gender affirming like clothing, or, you know, they don't feel safe in those spaces. It can just have, you know, a huge effect on their mental health. So they're probably more likely to try and find, you know, a bed for the night, go out clubbing, stay out all night there. So I think our community during lockdown, and what's, you know, what's happened through COVID, you know, it's really brought those issues forward for our community. They're not able to go to those kind of 3-day parties, you know, and sofa surf around at friends because everyone's in lockdown.
Right. And also the thing about lockdown has meant this in all areas of society, but I'm sure it's a huge problem in the queer community, is that people have the rise in domestic violence has been huge, and people who have been trapped at home and all these tensions. And so that must be an added burden right now because of that. You're getting lots of people who have been forced out onto the streets because of domestic abuse.
Yeah, or feeling trapped in the home. Like the kind of intro that you two do about domestic abuse and how, you know, it's how there's so many different representations of that. So a lot of people are experiencing like hate from their parents or siblings, other housemates. And that is having like a huge impact on them, and that's making them feel really unsafe where they live. Domestic violence itself, you know, we do have an overrepresentation of domestic abuse within our community. And I think it's, again, like when we look at what we visually see as homeless as being a rough sleeper, what we visually see as a domestic abuse victim is not necessarily a queer couple, even though it happens. So what you see on TV, what you see in the adverts, things like that, it's, you know, it's not as recognized.
Yeah, it's sort of always
by ourselves.
It's a straight man hitting a woman, isn't it? That's the image.
Yeah.
And with a bruise on your eye, rather than, often the signs aren't there. Can I lighten things up a bit and just say, is that a banana on the wall behind you?
Yeah, this is art by Lake, my partner. So this is a piece
of
art.
It's lovely.
I'm trying to see. Yeah, it's oil on canvas. Wow. They're really good, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, I am biased. They also made this necklace as well.
Oh, necklaces too. How did you get into the world of homelessness?
it was kind of by accident. I went to Crisis Skylight Centre because I was squatting down in South London and I was looking for a place to do art and Tai Chi. And I was like, I want to do some fun stuff during the day instead of hanging around in this squat. But they wanted me to stop being homeless and all these kind of things. I was like, oh, that seemed like a lot of hard work, actually. I was just going there to use their art materials. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was within that conversation that they put me onto working with vulnerable people, a course, City Lit. So it's really to like get into the voluntary sector and start helping out, because which is really strange, because it's like I was homeless technically myself because I was living in squats, but I started to work in a homelessness service with people who were rough sleeping whilst also being homeless myself.
Is that quite common for people who work in the homelessness sector to have been homeless themselves?
I think a third of the people that worked in the organisation that I started out in, but I think that they make an effort to hire people who have got lived experience. So, I mean, having an understanding of, you know, what right. people are going through is really important. I think it's the same for our project. You know, we try and hire people who are LGBTIQ plus themselves. They've had an experience of homelessness, or they have an understanding of some of the issues that the people that are coming through our door, you know, will identify.
Right.
So, because it is really important.
And how come you ended up in a squat in the first place?
Like many young people that come to London, you know, you're looking for a fresh start, but you find Soho and the bright lights of Soho and 0-hour contracts and dodgy landlords. And I think London's not really designed for young people in that sense. Not really. I think it can be quite exploitative, to be honest.
Just explain what a 0-hour contract is for anyone who's listening who doesn't know that?
It's where you're working as a temp, you're working in bars, you're not really given any kind of security, you're on minimum wage, not London living wage, but back then, yeah, minimum wage, I think it was like £7 an hour you're earning. And then the rent, I was sharing a room with like three other people. And, you know, I think the squat scene and the rave scene and Soho, it's all very kind of bright lights, you know. And I think that can really take young, especially like young queer people, can really take them in. And it makes you really feel like you're part of a community, but you're not, you're just at a party every day of the week, really. It takes its toll, I think.
There's also like something about queer people tending to congregate in like not really in suburbia, in like the more urban areas, and that's more expensive places to live and stuff like that, isn't it, as well? So it's harder.
Yeah, Manchester and Brighton, London, you'll have like an overrepresentation of LGBT people because we just feel safer.
Where did you come from?
Birmingham. I don't sound like a Brummie, do I?
No, you don't really.
And when you came from Birmingham to London, what were your plans?
I was fundraising. So I was one of those people that kind of stop you in the street and bounce around in front of you. And
I'm sorry, I don't have time. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I applied for that job once and they didn't give it to me.
Oh my God, another rejection you've had in your life.
And look at me, Alan, I soldier on.
I know, you are a miracle.
Hashtag pray for Chris. But what kind of kid were you, Carla?
I think I was a good kid. Yeah, I was like well into reading. I did well at school. I got some good grades as well. I think a lot of queer people just kind of like drop out of education as well. I think that we find school really tough, but it wasn't so much of a bother for me. I did okay. I mean, I really just wanted to come to London just for a fresh start and to make some new friends and just start all over again, really. And I think that happens quite a lot with young
yes.
people. They want to just like go and explore and have an adventure, start again. But yeah, I just think it's so big. Even me coming from Birmingham, which is a big city, I don't think that I was really prepared for, you know, how London can really suck you in a little bit and how massive it is. I love it.
And how old were you when you came?
I think it was like 20, 21. I did uni and did a couple of years. It was just like, you know, when I don't know if you had this experience when you were younger, but you're just, yeah, not really able to really focus on what it is that you want to do or how you're going to do it.
God, it's like me now.
You're still there.
So you came at 20 or 21, you came down. When is the point that you became homeless? When is the point that you...
I came to London, I had a job set up and I had a couple of people that I knew that also wanted to move to London. We shared a room together. There was only like one other person that we didn't know in that room. So that was great. but then dodgy landlord, we want to rent out this room, we can get more money for it. So then it was like moving into the next place, same kind of issue, bit of a dodgy housemate. So it kind of went on like that. Mm. Like you're looking for cheap rooms because you don't earn enough money. I kind of lost my job very quickly. I didn't really enjoy it. Like fundraising in London, it was too noisy. It was like, and also I got this job in a bar in Soho, which I was like, that's going to be so much fun. So yeah, I think when you're working on the scene, or you know, in bars and clubs, and you're not really earning enough money to cover your rent and you're partying, then when someone offers you the sort of opportunity to just share a room in a squat, it seems like, oh, this will be the answer to everything for a little while. Mm-hmm. And then actually a few years later, you're still in the squat. You're not an artist. You're not back studying. You're not really in any kind of secure job. And you're just not really having a great time. I think that's kind of where I got to when I went into the crisis skylight. So I was like, you know, and I lost my job as well. Even, you know, the kind of 0-hour contract job that I had. I had this experience of a colleague of mine being homophobic towards me, so that job didn't work out. So it just kind of, there was like a few different things that just sort of breaks you down over time.
Yeah.
So you end up just kind of being in a squat, you don't have a job, you don't have any money, you've kind of fallen out of love with Soho. Mm. What do I do now? You turn around one day and you're 25, 26, you're not necessarily like the youngest person anymore out on the scene as well, and you're just like, oh, I can't continue to live in this way, and I want to have like a, you know, a nice place to stay or a proper job. And yeah, so I just knew that I had to really change something. Mm.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And is your partner, were they in the same situation? Is that how you met?
No, we actually met in a shared house. Like, so a few years later, I'd been working in the homelessness sector. I'd moved out of a squat into another dodgy kind of garage that had been converted into a one-bedroom flat. Very unlucky with housing in London.
You could have your own TV show, like that Vice, you know, that Vice column that was like the worst places in London to live.
Yeah, I lived in most of them, I think. I don't know. But yeah, so I ended up moving into a shared house, and that's where I met my partner.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I work here. Lake works here as well, so my partner works here. They're the cleaner. They're a director, but they're also the cleaner.
Got it.
So yeah, I think that's a bit of a difference with the outside project as well, because we're very much a community project. So, you know, we'll have Jesse, who's a partnership manager, but he's also the recovery worker. Mm. So everyone works with the guests. Everybody is responsible for answering the door. Mm. You know, at some point,
that's nice.
Right. Now, and in the 3 years, you said, since you started the project, I'm just curious about the way that homelessness has, the numbers have got better or worse, and what help is available, and what the, I'm just, you know, wondering if there's been any change with the government over that time.
No, I wouldn't say so. I think it's definitely gotten worse since I started working in the homelessness sector.
In what way?
Just less provision, less funding. The funding is restricted to, you know, a year contract, or people are competing with each other for different things. There's no buildings to run services in. You know, there's a lot of damage that's been done with just like wider legislation, you know, other services that, you know, have been underfunded, you know, services for mental health, drug, alcohol support, services for people who are seeking asylum, people with no recourse to public funds. So all of these things have, it's like a storm in a teacup. what's happening right now. It's just like so many different things that are having a huge impact on homelessness.
And what about the kind of getting people out of homelessness? So they're in your, they're with you, they've got shelter, they're having access to some services. What's the next step?
It depends really on their situation. But I think one of the things that we think, you know, as a project needs to be addressed is the lack of higher support accommodation available to LGBTIQ plus people. You know, so people who have mental health, drug and alcohol issues, there's no LGBT specific bed spaces for high support. Same for elder care as well. I know Tonic are a great organisation. They're doing a lot of work around that. So I think that those are the gaps that really need to be filled.
I was just wondering what the definition of higher support is.
So it would be people with kind of more complex mental health needs or drug and alcohol support needs.
Got it.
It depends on what the situation of the person is. So we can try and help people access like rent deposit schemes to try and find private rented accommodation.
Uh-huh.
Preferably that isn't dodgy, like half of the rentals that I found in London. Mm. So yeah, it's like trying to find like good, safe accommodation. They might go into supported accommodation like Stonewall Housing Run. That's a pathway for young people.
So that's like apartments that Stonewall rents out.
Stonewall Housing, yeah, they have housing projects across London for young people. They can stay there for up to 2 years.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, no, they're great. They're our partners in the we partnered with them in 2017. So they manage our referrals and support people that are contacting the helpline. There's a little bit of pathway for people moving out of the shelter. But as I say, I think the hardest route out that we can see is for people with those higher support needs or people without recourse to public funds. So waiting for bed spaces in Micro Rainbow, for example, for people who are seeking asylum. You know, a lot of the time we're supporting people around multiple other needs so that they can then move into safe accommodation. You know, they would have to resolve their drug or alcohol issue or get support around their mental health so that they were then able to access like lower support accommodation, if that makes sense.
So they've got to get clean to get access to these other things, basically. Is that the rule?
Yeah, so I mean, you'd have to kind of demonstrate that you were sober and that you were able to kind of just live in a private accommodation with other people and it was safe for you and it was good for your recovery. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, that's a big issue for our community to kind of get to that point. So a lot of the time we're supporting people here at the shelter who have these higher support needs for a lot longer. If there were high support accommodation, specialist accommodation for them to go to, then they could stay there for a year or two and get real sort of wraparound support that they need.
So people listening to this thinking, holy fucking shit, like I'm feeling right now. What, as someone working in the thick of it, what would you say is the best way for people that they could help, but also your theories on what are there glaring things that you think if only this could happen, it would change things radically? Or where do we, you know, just, I'm curious about what you think needs to happen.
So we joined with other LGBTIQ plus housing groups. So AKT, Stonewall Housing, Tonic, Consortium, Stonewall. We all came together and created a manifesto for the mayoral elections. Some of the asks that we had in there was for a housing strategy in London, specifically for LGBTIQ plus people.
And that doesn't exist? There's not a strategy for...
There's no housing plan for our community here.
Ever?
No, there's no housing plan. There's no pathway. There's no kind of statutory housing services in that sense.
Wow.
That's a big ask.
Okay, what else?
So yeah, the housing and support pathway, so support services as well. Having accommodation is one thing, but, you know, we've lost really great organisations like PACE. They do like mental health.
Where did they go?
They just went under. I think a lot of LGBTIQ plus organisations that we've seen over the years maybe haven't had as much support as they needed. You know, and I think that if we were to have like real, you know, solid support services, so I think alongside accommodation, a commitment to those support services to prevent homelessness rather than, you know, just responding to it. Training for commissioners, else was on our list. Coordinated approach to data collection. So we were talking earlier about the data. There's so many different statistics all over the place that have been done over the years. But if we were to have, you know, a real solid understanding of what the problem is and real kind of community outreach and what was needed and what would help and what would work. Mm. But those were some of the things that we were looking to ask for.
And if people listening want to get directly involved with you guys, what's the best ways they can help?
They can give us buildings. We always need buildings. Yeah. So that's like right up here. Yeah. The more buildings, the more kind of property that's available to LGBTIQ plus organizations and housing. Mm. The more space that we can open, the better.
Yeah.
But we're just asking people to get involved online in the groups that are up and running, socials, things like that. Follow us and kind of just look at the kind of campaigning that we're doing and get behind us. We're at LGBTIQ outside.
Carla, it's so frustrating to me. I've come up against this and talking to people in various parts of the world, in cities with great homelessness, but also great amounts of empty buildings that are just sitting there.
They're everywhere. I mean, the one that we're in now, Clerkenwell Fire Station, that was empty for years before we moved in.
And who let you? The mayor let you because it belonged to the city?
Yeah, I think it's the mayor's office and the fire brigade, have allowed us to use the space, and we're really grateful for it. But I think there's so many buildings just like this all over town that could be put back to use. So, I think there's a lot of organisations that are making money out of renting them out as well. So I think renting them out for photo shoots or renting them out for a few people to live in them rather than actually putting them into use for what they were built for.
Yeah.
So you have care homes, for example, that, or community spaces that have closed down, community projects have closed. And now, there's a lot of property guardianships for people living in those spaces. And if they were to be put back into community use, then... for actual homelessness projects.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's such a shame you don't get more support in that direction of the property guardian, a section of that is given to you guys so that you take over the building for the time that it is not being used. It'd be,
Yeah, or purpose-built housing as well. Yeah. I mean, we know that...
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, so is it we can make use of meanwhile spaces, and it's great putting old buildings back into use, but... I think the homeless population, they deserve better.
Yeah.
They really do deserve better than to, trying to make it work in a building that's not really designed to hold so many people or, just things that are specially designed for, a really marginalized group of people that have, real high support needs a lot of the time.
Yeah. And you look at the ridiculousness of trying to do that in London, where imagine if you somewhere in Clerkenwell, if it was 1,000 square feet, it would be worth £1 million or something ridiculous, right?
Yeah, I think, property prices. Just the amount of money that you can make out of space, any kind of space. Mm. You look at things like that and you can understand why homelessness projects, we don't have enough money, especially it's such a kind of niche homelessness project as LGBTIQ+. Mm. It's really sort of we're back of the back of the queue in a lot of senses, I feel.
Carla, how do you look after your mental health? It must be very challenging to work in an environment like this. I mean, I'm kind of a bit depressed just thinking about all these things right now, and it's not my full-time job.
Yeah, so funny, because when I sit here and I'm talking to you guys about this, and it's all just very doom and gloom, it's very dark, but literally when I walked in today, they had this big cooking workshop and they were making this really nice meal. And yesterday when I walked in, they were doing karaoke, so it's kind of the kind of campaigning side of things, the activism, the talking about this issue and trying to get more space all of the time or more secure funding all of the time. That's very bleak, but the actual life that we have here, the community space that we've created is not, I think that's something that people don't think that when they come here that they're going to have so much fun and they're going to meet friends for life and they're going to get involved in so many creative things. I think that I get my kind of energy and it's almost going to work is very therapeutic in itself, being in that community space. And also the team as well, the crew that we have, we all talk a lot amongst ourselves. I think going into COVID was really tough. I think we all sat down and we were just what are we going to do? And, members of our team were just we'll move in. We'll just move in and we'll just lock down. Mm. And that was huge for me and Lake to see from our, people in our team that they were just so dedicated to this space that we'd created, this community space, and it just could not be broken up. Mm. Even if we had been offered to move out into other spaces, we probably would have been like, no, we're just going to stay here. We're going to make this work, which is what we ended up doing. Mm. And it was safe. And, you know, no one did get sick here. So we're very lucky, I think. And well, not just luck, yeah. but I think we just organized really quickly. So yeah. I think the support from other homelessness activists and groups really helped.
You do seem like a family, you know, from the outside. When I first ever heard of you guys and seeing who was involved, like Freddie Lanker and stuff, like, you just seem like a family.
Yeah, Fred. Love Fred. Yeah, he does our art for us. It's nice. It's like, people don't look at kind of homelessness flyers, you know, or flyers about that. And it's why we, you know, Fred's been really great to us. You know, we get messages now, people who have like read our poster on the wall in like their local gay bar, they wouldn't have read it otherwise. And it makes them realize that they're experiencing homelessness, because, you know, they wouldn't necessarily consider themselves. We literally had to, like, we wrote out this list just being like, are you staying around at friends' houses a lot? Is this happening? Do you feel unsafe to go home? Give us a call. You might be homeless. Mm. And people contact us like, oh my gosh. So that's because of Fred's art.
So Fred does all your posters.
Fred's the pot man. Is he the pottery man you're telling me about?
He actually, like, before he started doing our posters, he made like little bum pins for us.
Yeah.
Fred's a potter. He's a ceramicist, an artist, an illustrator. He does a lot of great queer art, and he's lovely. He's been helping us out.
He's listened to the show for Homo Sapiens for a long time, and sort of used to write in and stuff. And I loved his work because he'll do like plates, but with a bum on and stuff. And it's sort of playful and really colourful, and reminds me a little bit of like Keith Haring. So he does all your visuals.
Yeah, he does. He does all of the posters and campaigning art. Like, he did the emergency hotel artwork at the peak of COVID when we were campaigning for space. He did that as well. He's just like really quick and helps us out.
So how do you get your money?
We're funded through the Mayor's Innovation Fund. They've funded us the past few years, and the community as well. Mm. They donate and support us a lot.
Do you have to fight for that money each year, it's the kind of thing, or have they given you some assurances?
I think, it's an annual thing that we're funded. Mm. I mean, it would be great to have, you know, a bit of security when it comes to funding. Mm. Definitely, so we'll be able to really plan ahead. Security and property as well. Like I say, we have meanwhile use, but it'd be great to have a building that was, you know, specifically for us to run a community centre and to run the shelter that we need to run.
Okay, so they've said that about the fire station. It's just while it's not in use for something else kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a meanwhile use. We won't be able to live here forever.
God, it's such a huge thing you've done. It's incredible.
Thank you. Well, I didn't do it alone.
I was going to say, do you know Streetwise Opera?
Oh, yeah, I have heard of Streetwise Opera.
My friend Sue works there. Okay. She runs it. And it's a really great thing, Chris. It's a Streetwise Opera is a opera company that goes out into the community and does opera with homeless people. And so they kind of come into, I guess, centres, and they do it in different places in the country.
That's cool.
And it's a really beautiful, I've seen a few of their things, and they put on these shows, and it's a sort of a focus for people, and a kind of to give structure as well as to give, you know, art therapy. And it's a really lovely thing. And they have people coming in, you know, and collaborating, because we think, gosh, you know, there's various ways you can help. And I think we always think, well, just get people homes. They're homeless. Get them a home. That's what they're less. Yeah. What they have less of. But actually, you know, there's many other ways to nourish and support. And I think through the arts and through seeing these people sing and kind of let it all out and hearing their stories has been a really, it's really kind of changed altered my view about how you approach dealing with something like homelessness. Or there are many approaches, and I think I wasn't very clued into that before.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're probably the only shelter that used to take people to the pub quiz.
I love that.
You know, we take people to cabaret shows down at RVT. Quite often we'd have like a VIP table. Mm. It's really important to have that connection to the community and connection to something creative. And
yeah. You're doing it in a way that is, you know, hearing you say like how misunderstood and undervalued the LGBT community is in these areas, but then you're doing everything you're doing, like your artwork you're describing and what you just said there is like, and what Alan's just talking about is like, you're doing it with a queer sensibility that people will get, and it taps into that. So It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's introducing LGBT people to like safe spaces as well. So mm-hmm. if they are young and they've just come out and now they're homeless and, you know, we take them to places that we think that they're going to be safe.
Yeah.
You know, they'll continue to have so like brilliant. Engagement with the community in a safe way, because we do have a lack of social spaces that aren't bars.
Yeah.
Well, this has been great. It's been really inspiring, and we both feel so in awe of the work that you're doing, and I hope that people listening will feel the same and also maybe feel predisposed to giving you a little helping hand. What's your website?
So it's lgbtiqoutside.org.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Carla. It's been such a joy. And please just let us know any more future stuff that we can help with and if we can support, and in any way, we'd love to.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me on and listening to me. Oh. All my depressing doom and gloom about homelessness.
Right, Alan, come on. You must know someone who's got a massive building we can give them.
I'm going to get on the phone right now. No, seriously, though, it's so crazy, isn't it? I just, this idea of all these places being empty yeah. and all these people being on the streets, it's, you know. And it has got worse in London. I mean, in many cities, like San Francisco, for instance. It's the centre of San Francisco because, you know, so much money is going in there because of all the tech people. But that's just meant, you know, the disparity. Yeah. But I think it gets my goat. That thing of, you know, climbing over people sleeping in the streets in order to get to some swanky restaurant. And actually, I don't know. I know it's not as simple as that, but this empty building thing really, really gets me.
You know, not just empty buildings. Build a building for it. I think it's so amazing that there's people like them who decide that they're going to, you know, set up this monumental thing. You know, the admin and the bureaucracy that it must be.
Oh, can you imagine?
But it is also like a little bit of a shame that it has to be coming from that way. One person entrepreneurially with an idea. But I'm so thrilled they're doing it. And I'm mega grateful.
Me too. I think it's absolutely so admirable and so great. And just changing so many young queer kids' lives.
Yeah. So listeners, please write in. Let us know what you thought. If you know any large empty buildings that can be donated to projects. Or if you...
just send them as an attachment on your email.
Or if you fancy building a building in central London, own a plot of land. I am quite handy with a hammer, I have to say. Happy to muck in.
And I'm very good at throwing a pashmina and a few... throw cushions around.
The Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen of New York is your nickname. Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen, interior designer, for those who don't remember him.
You can write to us at hello@homosapienspodcast.com.
Yeah. Or on @homosapiens at Instagram or on Facebook @homosapienspodcast. You can also rate and subscribe at Apple Podcasts. And if we pick your review of the week on Homo Sapiens Extra,
guess what? You'll get a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Homo Sapiens t-shirt. I mean, come on.
Yeah, cool. So thanks, listeners. This has been an utter joy as always. Alan, you've been a delight.
You've been charming.
Oh.
And the sounds of the Spitfires going across your house and to land at Bryars Norton's always.
Did you hear them this time?
Yes.
Do you know what? I don't hear them anymore. It's so weird.
I love it. It's sort of, it is very comforting. It's very sort of, you know, Brief Encounter or something, a sort of a David Lean film.
I couldn't agree more. There's part of me that feels like I always wanted to be a 1940s housewife.
Totally. I can see you. Keep the home fires burning.
Yeah.
Yes. I've been terribly happily married for 40 years. Oh, there's a piece of grit in my eye. There's a piece of grit in my eye. Oh, you're a doctor.
I totally have an affair with a gardener, though.
Would you?
Yeah. I can tell you exactly what he looks like as well, but let's save that for next week.
Yeah, maybe, yes. Okay, everybody. Well, Chris goes off and pleasures himself. We'll see you.
Take care.
Next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Powered by Spirit Studios.